verse 7 through 13. And the first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood. And they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees were burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. And the second angel sounded, as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of the waters. And the name of the star was called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many of the men died from the waters because they were bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so that the third part of them was darkened. And the day shone not for the third part of it, and night likewise. And I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe unto the habitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound." And it is into this world that we're now entering, a world in this condition, a condition that millions will live into and yet be left alive. And continuing in Revelation verse 16, 4 through 9 and verse 18, it continues, "And the third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and the fountains of the waters, and they became blood. And I heard the angel of the waters say, Thou art righteous, O Yahweh, which art and was and shall be, because thou hast judged us. For they have shed the blood of the saints and the prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink, for they are worthy. And I heard another out of the altar say, Even so, Yahweh El Elyon, true and righteous are thy right judgments. And the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and the power was given to him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of Elohim, which has power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory." And verse 18 continues, "And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great." And upon this chaotic and desolate landscape, either we or our children or perhaps our grandchildren and millions of other frail human beings, the totality of humanity will find themselves a part of and yet dependent upon what is left over. Now consider the state of a young man named Luke. Luke is a 26-year-old man who has come through all this and is hiding with a few friends in an abandoned remains of a warehouse in southern Wisconsin Industrial Park, on the banks of what used to be a crystal-clear, spring-fed glacial lake, but no more. Despite his isolated location, he and a few friends, well, some of them, have survived the floods and the firestorms and the earthquakes and even the great earthquake and the ravages of these events. The air is filled with soot, and the noondays are as dark as dust, and the trees and the grass are singed, and the towns are in ruins. Food is scarce, and the landscape is barren, and the waters are polluted. Luke and a few surviving friends are just barely hanging on to life. They have been surviving by scavenging canned food they found in the ashes of a burned-out local supermarket. Using all the survival skills they learned from their training as United States Marines, using their knives to open the cans, rationing and sparing and sharing, but that source is almost gone now. There are no fish in the red polluted lake or the nearby Bark River. A few more cans left. His friends are asleep and hard to arouse. He has a fever, and boils over his body are now worsening. His resistance to infection is waning. His vision is cloudy. He can just see the blurred distant shadows now. His mind is getting confused. What will life be like for this young man? He thinks back to his boyhood. He remembers kayaking down the near Bark River with his grandpa and with his Aunt Ashley. He remembers rapidly through the narrow rapids and ducking under the low-hung willow branches and frightening geese and ducks and stopping to observe beaver dams and the tributaries. He remembers college and remembers graduating in his Marine uniform. Then he was off to see the world, to see the glimpses, and he remembers these glimpses of long-fought battles in Venezuela and Gaza and Bosnia and back to Afghanistan and the Horn of Africa and then the new Kurdistan and then to Lebanon and Syria and Iran. But mostly right now, he remembers Susie's bright face, her low-cut gown in her marine ball, at the Marine Ball. Was that last year? Or was that 2 or 3 years ago? Not quite sure. Time is now so blurred. Wonder whatever happened to Susie. Communications broke down with the first stratospheric fireball, its crippling electromagnetic pulse. Months went by in his mind, a time of his life speeding by in seconds. Can't remember how 8 of his Marine buddies happened to be with him near his home in southern Wisconsin. When the seals were opened, and then the trumpets, it's all so confusing, such a blur. But they are Marines, and they leave no man behind. He does remember there were 10 of them when the second fireball appeared, and now he can only see 3. And are they still alive? He doesn't quite know. His mind is clouded. He is not sure if he is awake or dreaming. Cannot move his left arm. Pain in his neck. I think I will sleep a while. And just as it appears, when that despair has prevailed, and when it's all is lost, time's up. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, the pivotal event in world history, the crux of time, the moment is happening. Time is up. Yep, time's up. The final trumpet sounds, the sky peels open, even from here in Wisconsin, as if a hologram projected through the gray haze yellow. Luke can see the sky full of white horses, led by one on whose banner is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and Yahweh is one. Yeshua, the Messiah, has returned. Open the scroll in the sky. He can see it. Is it projected for the whole world, all places, all time zones, all latitudes, all beheld him. The whole world beholds this, projected onto the screen of the overhead sky with the sound of the trumpet, Tekiah, Teruah, Shavarim, Tekiah, Gedeolah, on the golden trumpet, Tekiah, Teruah, Shavarim, Tekiah, Gedeolah. And the sound is projected over and around the whole globe. Yeshua and the Kadashim, the saints, have just touched down on the Mount of Olives, day 1, Jerusalem Standard Time. Luke and his 3 friends hear it. They see it. They feel it. The hologram in the sky, the strong, deep vibrations penetrating their bodies and landing on the Mount of Olives. Suddenly they're awake. They're aware and they're alert, but they're still frail and weak and febrile. Luke and his friends manage to smile at each other, but too weak to speak, and now they feel a gradual, soft peacefulness and drift off into a much-needed sleep. Yeshua and the saints, so-called Kodashim, Hebrew term, entered Jerusalem and quickly established the headquarters of the world of tomorrow, the kingdom of Yahweh, the millennium. The governments of this world are overthrown. Yeshua, the Messiah, reigns supreme. What a moment. What a time. Hallelujah. Baruch Hashem. Some time has passed, hours or days, and not quite sure, but Luke slowly awakens to see a distant glow in the eastern sky, growing larger, moving without sound, coming their way. Luke crawls over to his 2 friends. Look, it's a bird. No, it's a plane. No, it's a Kodesh. Luke has Yeshua has led his saints, in Hebrew the Kodeshim, in a whirlwind conquest of the vast armies surrounding Jerusalem. The Kodeshim are the resurrected humans, both dead and alive, who are resurrected in the first resurrection only a few years earlier. They have been with Yeshua preparing for his final return, the coming of the Messiah to the earth, an event for which the world has long awaited, while the earth waited in death, sorrow, and travail. And from his throne in Jerusalem, Yeshua has directed them, comfort you, my people. And they go forth to comfort, to heal, and to gather the remnant of his people to the four corners of the earth. A Kodesh flies through the air towards Wisconsin, and there he finds Luke and his ailing, frail friends. Isaiah 40:10, behold, Yahweh Elohim will come with a strong hand, and his arm will rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work is before him. He will feed his flock like a shepherd, and he will gather the lambs in his arm and carry them into his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. And all over the world, the Kodeshim travel to bring emergency aid to the millions of human beings who are just barely hanging on, like Luke and his friends. They miraculously provide for those who are famished, weak, blind, and lame, to those who are malnourished and undernourished, all who are this frail remnant. The peoples are cared for. They're fed, and they're clothed, and they're healed in body and in spirit. And then they're resettled. They're called Kodesh, the holy ones, plural Kodeshim, at this time after the resurrection. One says to Luke, I am here and have revived you. And now I give you a mission. Luke, you're in charge. Many more of your brothers and sisters are scattered nearby. I will bring them here and will meet you by the south bend of the Bark River. Make 10 rafts. You know the river well. Many more will join you for a portage to the Rock River. And there you will need a big raft for a trip to the junction of the Mississippi. Take the Rock River through southern Wisconsin into northern Illinois to the river mouth near where the Green River joins the Mississippi. And there, larger crowds will be provided for you and others joining you there. And I can be reached by calling my name. The feeding and the clothing of the refugees. Now these little ones, these survivors, are gathered. They are protected by the great shepherd himself. He prepares their food, their drink. He provides their covering and their shelter. He who is personally and emotionally comforting them. He who provides gentleness to them. To those who have lived through the most violent times in human history, he extends his personal help through his Kodeshim. The regathering and the reorganizing of the nations. Zechariah 8:6 says, thus says Yahweh of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of the people in those days, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, says Yahweh of hosts. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country, and I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their Elohim in truth and in righteousness. Jeremiah 31:8 says, behold, I will bring them from the north country and gather them from the coast of the earth, and I will bring them the blind and the lame, and the woman with child of her that travaileth with child together. A great company shall return thither, and they shall come with weeping, and with supplication I will lead them, and I will cause them to walk by the rivers of the waters in a straight way, wherein they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Hear the word of Yahweh, O you nations, and declare it to the isles afar off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him, and keep him as a shepherd does his flock. Isaiah 61:9 says, arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth as dark as gross darkness of the people, but Yahweh shall arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you, and the nations shall come to your light, and the kings of your brightness. Lift up your eyes round about and see, and all they gather themselves together. They come to you, and their sons shall come from afar, and their daughters shall be nursed by your sides. And then you shall see and flow together, and your heart shall fear and be enlarged, because of the abundance of the sea shall be converted to you, and the forces of Gentiles shall come to you. Now the multitude of camels shall cover you, and the dromedaries of Midian and Ephah, and they of Sheva shall come, and they shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth the praises of Yahweh. And the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together to you. The rams of the Nebaioth shall minister unto you. They shall come up with acceptance under mine altar, and I will glorify the house of my glory. Who are these that fly as in a cloud, as in the doves in the window? Surely the coasts await me, for the ships of Tarshish first, to bring your sons from afar, their silver and their gold with them. And unto the name of Yahweh, your Elohim, and to the Holy One of Israel, because he has glorified you. And going on in Isaiah 11, verse 11. And it shall come to pass in that day that Yahweh shall set his hand again to get the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria and from Egypt and from Paphos and from Cush, and from Elam, and from Shinar, and from Hamath, and from the coast to the sea. And he shall set up a nest that is a banner, or a signal, or a sign, as Joe Good mentioned to it, a sign of Messiah, for the nations. And he shall assemble the outcast of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah, both the outcast of Israel and the dispersed of Judah, from both the four corners of the earth. And so Luke and his friend shall be brought to the land of Israel by a foreign ship manned by a captain and a crew who wish to help in the resettling and the scattering of the remnant of Ephraim and Judah, the people of Yahweh. They find themselves among dozens and then hundreds of others, most of whom they have never seen or heard of before. They went down the Rock River into the Mississippi and now into the big ships, into the Gulf. And from there they cross the Atlantic, and they go through the Straits of Gibraltar, through the Mediterranean, and on to the port of Haifa. Some come from Australia, a lot come from Africa, some from India, some from Russia, from Argentina, from China, all heading towards the coast of Israel. Haifa is the largest port and the chief portal entry to this new land. And there they settle and begin a new life. They plant groves and build shelters, more like sukkah at first, and they begin to reorganize into villages, into townships and districts and nations. But soon among the highest priorities, they travel to Jerusalem to meet the king, Yeshua HaMashiach, the Messiah, and his Kodashim. They mingle with some whose names in history were Abraham and Enoch, and Noach and Moshe, and Ruth and Miriam, and Yosef and Yehuda, and Yaakov and Yohanan and Sepha, and Lydia and Paul and Seth, and of course, every Marine's favorite, Joshua and David. The prophets who recorded the messages were there. Isaiah and Amos and Daniel and Ezekiel and Micah were all there. Everyone wanted to meet more Kodashim and to spend more time listening to the real stories, the details that were lost or never recorded, and Yeshua seemed personally interested in everyone and somehow had time to talk with each of the thousands. He seemed to be in no hurry. His intimate knowledge of each individual made conversation direct, inspiring, and personal and comforting. He really was interested in each of the sheep of Israel and Judah. However, time had to be made for the others, and besides, there was a lot of work to do. There would be opportunity to return to Jerusalem three times a year from now on and forever. Isaiah 2:2 says, "And it shall come to pass in the days that the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and the nations shall flow to it. And many shall go and say, Come, let us go to the mountain of Yahweh and to the house of Elohim of Jacob. And he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem." And then on to an inheritance. just north of Jerusalem, near a small burned-out village of Tekoa. They're given a survey to see the land and then are given personal property, but on to a life full of challenges, fun, adventure, and challenges. Isaiah 58:12 says, "And they shall be of you, shall build the old waste, and shall raise up foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach, and the restorer of the paths to dwell in. And from the remnants of the recent battles of Gog and Magog, and Meshach and Tubal, who have come to spoil, there were 7 months of burying the dead and cleansing the land, and then on to the replanting and to the rebuilding. And they shall build the old waste," Isaiah 61 says, "and they shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the waste cities and the desolations of many generations." And Ezekiel carries on in chapter 34, "And I will make them and the places round about my hill a blessing, and I will cause the shower to come down in its season, and there shall be showers of blessing. And the tree of the field shall yield her fruit, and the earth shall yield her increase, and they shall be safe in my land, in their land, and they shall know that I am Yahweh, when I have broken the bands of their yoke and delivered them out of the hands of those who served themselves of them. And they shall no more be prey of the heathen, neither shall the beast of the land devour them, but they shall dwell safely, and none shall make them afraid." And Zechariah 8:3 goes on to say, "And thus says Yahweh of hosts, I am jealous for Zion and a great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great fury. Thus says Yahweh, I am returned to Zion, and I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be a city of truth, a mountain of Yahweh of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, there shall yet be old men and old women in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for a very old age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, it will be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant in those days. Should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, says Yahweh of hosts." And so they build, and they replant the paths and the plazas and the houses and the villages and the cities. Now, important, notice that these were done by the hands of men and women, with hard work and dedication and sweat, under the guidance and the directions and the instructions and the mentoring of Yeshua and the sons of Elohim, the Kodeshim. Now, when I, like most, I suppose, of you, think about the millennium, you know, that great world to come, the kingdom of Elohim, the kingdom of Yahweh, that great time, often focus on what am I going to be doing, you know, and how great I'm going to be ruling over the cities, and I'm going to be a king and a priest, you know. Our part is resurrected saints into that. But sometimes I think we may put too much focus on ourselves, what we're going to be doing, but we forget that we're there to serve, and there are people there to be served. And hope and pray that, and plan on having a role as a resurrected Kodesh in that first resurrection, as Yeshua calls it, the better resurrection. But here, I just want to focus on the people that are left, the nations that are being ruled over. Rather than looking at ourselves, at our power and our dominion, what is the role of the people there? Now let us consider a principle in Psalms 127:1 that says, and if you look at this carefully, you'll see that principle. You'll see it even if you don't look at it too carefully, because it's quite obvious. "Except Yahweh build the house, they labor in vain that build it." So who's building the house? Yahweh. But who's doing the work? His servants, the people who are building it there. "Except Yahweh keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain." So Yahweh is going to keep the city. Why even have a watchman? Obviously, there is a role for the watchman. In fact, you're called to be watchman there. And So anyway, the principle is that when he says Yahweh is doing thing, he does it through his servants. He directs, he's the builder, but the laborers and the workers actually do the actual work. It says here that Yahweh does the work and builds the house, but he does it through his servants. Now, as soon as the immediate needs of this remnant, in fact, while they were being taken care of, the seeds of a new educational system is being put in place. Organizing a righteous, law-abiding society is dependent upon effective education. Such an educational system is a high priority. Educational systems are established and are based on the law of Yahweh. Leviticus 26 lists some of these. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am Yahweh. If you walk in my statutes and you keep my commandments and you do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield its increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and the threshing shall reach to the vintage, and the vintage shall reach into the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full, and shall dwell in your land safely. And I will give peace to the land, and when you lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall a sword go through your land. Early on, all are taught the relationship between the laws of Yahweh and success, the real laws of success. Isaiah 26:9 goes on to say, "With my soul have I desired you in the night. Yes, with my spirit within me I seek you early. For when your judgments are on the earth, the inhabitants of the world learn righteousness." In Isaiah 29:24, "They also that are erred in spirit shall come to understanding, and they that murmur shall learn doctrine," that is instruction. And Isaiah 45 goes on to tell about this. "Assemble yourselves and come together, draw near together, you that are escaped of the nations. They have no knowledge that set up the wood of the graven image and pray unto Elohim that cannot serve. Tell you and bring them near, yea, yes, let them take a counsel together. Who has declared this from ancient time and who has told it from this time? Have not I Yahweh? There is no Elohim else beside me. A just Elohim and a Savior there is none beside me. Look unto me and be saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am Elohim and there is none else. I have sworn by myself, and the word has gone out of my mouth, and righteousness shall not return, that unto me every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall swear. Surely shall one say, in Yahweh have I righteousness and strength, even to him shall men come, and all that are increased against him shall be ashamed. And in Yahweh shall all the seeds of Israel be justified and shall be glory." And so Elohim teaches his people to perform a job rather than doing it himself. "Thus says Yahweh, your Redeemer, Holy One of Israel, I am Yahweh, your Elohim, which teaches you to profit, which leads you by the way that you should go." Note again that Elohim teaches us what to do, how to do the work, and he guides us to success. But we are to do the work, and the people in those days will be doing the work. Now, if we study the record of how Yahweh teaches throughout the Bible, the thread through these millennial scriptures, you will find very few sermons, very few lecture formats like we're doing right now. You will find very few teachers standing in front of a class with a lecture and PowerPoints. Someone, they said they wanted to use the PowerPoint program that Yeshua did in the first century. When we were talking about which PowerPoint to use here. Yahweh walked through the garden with Adam and Eve, and he walked as he talked, and he dined with Abraham, and Moses spent time person to person on the mountain, and Yeshua walked with his disciples with a constant commentary on observations and events as they unfolded. Paul was taken into the Arabian desert where he communed person to person with Yahweh and Yeshua. But aha, what about those visions? First, notice how Yahweh instructs us to teach our children. Shema Yisrael, Yahweh, our Elohim, Yahweh is one, and you shall love Yahweh, your Elohim, with all your heart and with all your soul and all your might. And these words which I commanded you this day shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, shall talk with them when you sit in the house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them upon the post of your house and upon your gates. The method is mentoring, frequent daily application, study and action, principles coupled with abundant physical action links. And when a key element needs to be added that is not clear, that's the aha moment, a direct word from the master. This is how Yahweh will teach his children in this world to come. Learning through application, mentoring, plus direct vision. And he will send you Yeshua HaMashiach, which before was preached unto you, whom the heavens must receive until the times of the restitution of all things, which Yahweh has spoken by the mouth of his holy prophets before the world began. And Yahweh shall guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and make fat your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And they shall be of you, shall build the old waste places and shall raise up the foundations of the generations. And you shall be called the repairer of the breach and the restorer of the paths to dwell in. Now the earth is on the road to being fully restored back to that perfect paradise, the restoration of all things, a worldwide Garden of Eden. Luke has begun training in agriculture with a minor in engineering. He's met a beautiful young woman from Ireland named Taya, and they're planning a life, a long, long life together. They've already building their future home on a ridge overlooking the Jordan Valley, facing east, towards the valley. When they arrived, it was a sandy desert, a dry wadi going to the east. But now there are springs along the ridges and creeks merging into rivers, emptying into the distant Jordan. A new east-west valley is nearby, and one of them, which encourages the rain into the east, the previously dry eastern landscape. Luke, Taya, and their growing family are learning technical skills and agricultural principles and details while applying Yahweh's law of life. Gardens and trees are now actively being planted and are spreading towards the distant Jordan. Life is not, however, all work. There is ample time, a factor of high quality of life and productivity, and so many things God desires and that we desire. The absence of need for a military-industrial complex takes a big load off. Of large police forces takes a big load off. The huge prisons and the oppressive taxation system and the oppressive governments, plus abundant production. And the whole world is living God's way. The whole world is keeping the Sabbath and Yahweh's feast days, as it says in Zechariah 14. Imagine not only taking off for Sukkot each year, but imagine being off for three feasts each year. Not just Sukkot, but three pilgrimage feasts every year. Just imagine that. And time to travel and learn, and time off every 7 years, the principle of sabbatical year. Not just for farmers, but to study or to serve, some to help one or to travel or to plan. Isaiah 51:3 says, "For Yahweh shall comfort Zion, and he shall comfort her waste places, and shall make her a desert of Eden, and her desert like the Garden of Eden. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody." Rebuilding the wasted landscape. "And yet a little while, and Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field, and a fruitful field shall be esteemed as a forest." Isaiah 35 continues, "Then the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as a rose. And it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with ever with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be into it, and the excellence of Carmel and Sharon, and they shall see the glory of Yahweh and the excellence of our God. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water, and habitation of dragons, where each lay shall be grass and reeds and thrushes. Then Isaiah 41:15 says, behold, I will make you a sharp threshing machine, a sharp threshing instrument having teeth. Thou shalt thresh the mountains and beat them and shall make them as chaff. Now, why in the world do we need a machine? Yahweh and Yeshua could make the passages in the mountains by earthquakes or by miracles or some other geological events which he and they control. But here he directs the people to direct to making a machine that people are to make and to use to do one of the jobs. And going on, Isaiah 41, and you shall fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them. And you shall rejoice in Yahweh in the glory of the Holy One of Israel. When the poor seek water, and there is none, and their tongue fails for strength, I, Yahweh, will hear them, and the God of Israel will not forsake them. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of valleys, and make the wilderness a pool of water and dry lands of water. This is what's called terraforming, changing the land. And it only takes the direct intervention of Yahweh to transform a planet. He certainly could do that. But here he's instructing you to make a machine to do part of this thing. Now Luke and his wife Taya have helped build this threshing machine, at least the prototypes, the ones that open up the valley from the Tekoa Ridge going eastward through the Wadi Ephraim, allowing rain-bearing clouds to move across the western range and water in the eastern slope and to the western slopes of the Transjordan hills of Reuben and Gad. And I will plant in the midst cedar and the shittah tree and the myrtle tree and the oil tree, and I will set in the desert fir tree and the mine and the pine and the box tree together. Now Elohim directed these trees to be planted. He says, I plant them just like I build a house. But will Elohim actually plant the trees, or will he be directing the people to plant these trees? Isaiah 41:20, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of Yahweh has done this and the Holy One of Israel has created it. Here is a description of the process of the rebuilding of the terrain done by the hand of Elohim and through the work of his people. Preparing the land for cultivation. Of course, you can read through Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 and see the benefits of doing things by the law of Yahweh. Let's read a few verses from Deuteronomy 28. And all these blessings shall come upon you and shall overtake you if you shall hearken unto the voice of Yahweh Eloheinu. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the field. And blessed shall be the fruit of your body, and the fruit of the ground, and the fruit of your animals, and the increase of your cattle, and the flock, and of your sheep. Blessed shall be your basket and your store. Blessed shall you become when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. Rebuilding the transportation networks. Isaiah 11:16 says, and there shall be a highway for the remnant of the people which is left from Assyria, like it was to Israel in the day when he came out of Egypt. Isaiah 19 continues, in that day shall there shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian shall come into Egypt, and the Egyptian to the Assyrian, and the Egyptian shall serve with the Assyrians. And in that day shall Israel be a third with Egypt and with Assyria, even the blessing in the midst of the land, whom Yahweh of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. Now, such highways will produce rapid and safe transportations through the nations. Now, does this mean we will continue with the internal combustion engine with 18-wheelers, the jetliners of today, rolling over vast landscapes of asphalt and concrete? What kind of highways will this be? Well, consider a possibility magneto rails traveling along at 400 miles an hour, quiet, safe, non-polluting, operated by solar and wind-generated electrical and mechanical systems, magnetic levitation propulsion systems. And there are many other options, maybe new systems of anti-gravity lifting propulsion technologies we don't even know. Luke is typical of the person living in that wonderful world of tomorrow. He and Taya have developed, a family have developed their fig tree farm for 100 years, exporting throughout Israel and Lebanon. Then Luke and Taya took a sabbatical year off to learn the technology of magneto-levo rail engineering. And living in a land, a world of increasing gladness, of increasing technology, but always linked to the land, always with a land-based economic support. And they took a year, another year off during another sabbatical to volunteer to assist in the building of this much-needed magneto-levo rail across Africa. Now, why does Elohim fool with all this? As the psalmist said, what is man that thou considerest him? In a moment, in the billionth of a nanosecond, Elohim could create a universe, and did. Any other way, he wanted to do it. In 6 days, he created a perfect world, fit for and inhabited by his very, very good creation when he finished it. But did he really need 6 days? Or did he do it in 6 days because he took that long for his own reasons or for a lesson to his creation? Why does Elohim bother with what man can do on this small planet, circling in a small solitary sun in the third branch of the second spiral arm of the number two galaxy in our cluster, which is only a medium-sized galactic cluster, in the outer reaches of the Virgo supercluster, which itself is a speck in the cosmic cluster network? But consider, just as we love to see and participate in the first steps and the first words in the early development of our own sons and daughters, so Yahweh, the ideal Father, enjoys and loves and revels in the simplistic, infantile efforts of his very own sons and daughters. It is a characteristic. Now, we can't talk about the nature of God, but I can talk about characteristic of God, right? It is a characteristic of Yahweh that even though he can accomplish all things with a flip of his index finger, yes, with a debar, a spoken word, or even just a focused thought, but with this being, great being, who created and sustains the vast universe from the farthest quasar and Seyfert galaxy to the giant black holes in our galactic centers to the microbiological flora and the deep sea floor, and who knows the stars and the 20-something billion people of history all by name, he who is omnipotent. Who's the creator, and who is the sustainer, and who's in charge? Well, Yahweh is, and he is perfectly committed to his involvement and his intimate relationship with his human children, observing, overseeing, managing the restoration of all things, restoring them, restoring his creation through his sons and daughters, all through men, then in that great day to all of his servants. Did you engineers ever teach your children the basics of physics? Did you investors ever teach your children the basics of the stock market system? Did you secretaries ever teach your children the basics of a computer system or a computer organization? Did you accountants ever teach your children how to balance a checkbook? And homemakers, did you teach your children how to plan and cook a dinner? Janitors, did you teach your children how to efficiently clean and organize your garage? Nutritionists, Did you enjoy teaching your children the basics of nutrition? And your carpenters, did you ever teach your children how to lay and cut a straight line? And your physicians, did you teach your children the basics of anatomy and physiology? Then, as we are so pleased with our children, what little we know in this corrupted world, to inspire them to achieve and accomplish ever-growing skills, so does our Heavenly Father, the perfect Father. He similarly, but on a much grander scale, much grander level, takes pleasure in teaching his children. The conclusion is clear and unequivocal that Yahweh takes greater pleasure in seeing his children, using his laws, solve the problems, and teaching them how to succeed than just by doing it himself, with minor expenditure of effort from him directly, which he could do. The emphasis of pleasure of teaching the most noble of professions. And of truth, only our Messiah and his Father, Yahweh, are truly Rabbi. The biological revolution. It should be clear by now that there will be plenty of need for educated carpenters and stonemasons and engineers and accountants and shipbuilders and highway planners and geologists and metallurgical scientists and agriculturists and forestry specialists and merchants and homemakers and teachers. But now, as the physical world is reconstructed, what about the biological world, the world of plants and animals? Joe Good touched upon this some years ago at the Season or Joy. Isaiah 11:6-8, and the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion shall fatling together, and the little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, and the young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the suckling child shall play on the hole of the asp, and a winged child shall put his hand on the crocodile's den, and shall not hurt and destroy in all his holy mountains, from the earth until shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh as the rivers cover the sea. Now, what does it take to make a lion a vegan? Well, it could be a straightforward miracle. Appetite obviously needs to be changed. This means his whole neurological system has to be reprogrammed. His teeth, the lion's teeth, can't grind hay. He will starve. His stomachs, his intestines would be clogged up. Getting to know some extra pouches, the taste and the smells and his brain chemistry. Now, some scholars say that this is a metaphor, but in a world really free of harm, of physical and spiritual, that is not only possible, but is sure to happen. The message of Isaiah is universal. The extent of his revival includes universal peace, universal prosperity, change of nature of man and the real world from mountains and rivers and deserts and climate to the correspondingly complex biological changes here and elsewhere described. Now, through all this, move forward here. Through all this, the lifespan has been expanded, and it is likely that the lifespan will be as a tree, as the scriptures say. But it may be that the people will tend to live on for the full 1,000 years. And so Luke, our 26-year-old friend, by the end of this 1,000 years, may have spent 100 years in a fig farm. A fig farm here, exporting, and a sabbatical year to do what we discussed there, and then 100 years as a magneto level rail technician, and then he wanted another profession, and so Luke is still living on in health and joy and accomplishment at the ripe old age of 1,026. When he and his three marine buddies, who were alive on the bank of the Bark River, have exceeded the lives of Adam, Enoch, Methuselah, and Seth. He and Taya have dozens of children and many grandchildren. great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, which she sees regularly, especially on Sukkot every year. He has helped to teach the ways of Yahweh, the way of give, the ways of abundant life. From what you can see, even though we can only see partly, we can see that even physical life in the millennium will be exciting and fulfilling, full of adventures and discovery and profitable work, long lives full of education, travel, personal development, and public service. All of this, one part, just one part of the great plan of Yahweh, a plan made possible by the planning, the unselfish life, and the sacrifice of the Lamb, our Messiah. As the psalmist put it in 113, "Praise you, Yahweh. Praise, O you servants of Yahweh. Praise the name of Yahweh. Blessed be the name of Yahweh from this time forth and forevermore." So now we're